Good afternoon. Welcome to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne. Hey, Bourne, guess who's dropping by here in about 5 minutes' time?
Our friend from Montreal?
Count Stockula, we used to call him all the time over at Hockey Night in Canada. PJ Stock will stop by. We'll talk about the Montreal Canadiens. We will preview tomorrow night's Hockey Day in Canada matchup, the 7 o'clock one at least, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens. And we should probably spend some time today talking about a few things. Gold helmets, Arizona, St. Louis playing essentially in an in-season playoff series, it feels like. Matt Sundin, I'll tell you why in a second. But first, Joe Thornton had a virtual meet and greet with all of our prize winners from Sportsnet 590 The Fan yesterday with Jumbo Joe. And again, congratulations to Danny Houghton, Eddie Chapman, Rob O'Neill, Chris Tom, and his daughter Haley. Everyone that participated last night had a great time. Got a chance to talk to Jumbo Joe, who is, like, I don't know, like you look around the NHL, Borny, and I understand how professional sports can make you grumpy, can make you grouchy. Everybody has bad days. You have to cut a lot of people a lot of slack. Joe Thornton, and again, last night on this virtual meet and greet, I don't know that he's ever had a bad day. Like, I'm sure bad things have happened to him during a day, but he just seems like the guy that's never had a bad day in his life. Give me your thoughts on Joe Thornton. We kick off the program today.
Well, he's a big personality, but I also think that that mindset, the way that he is that you're talking about, allows you to remain engaged over a long NHL career. Like, some guys are so torn up about one game or one shift, and it lets them, you know, spiral in all these different directions. And it's an emotional roller coaster. Your body and your brain can't handle that. And so to have Joe's more whimsical, you know, carefree attitude, I think that allows him to stay in the game as long as he had and still be interested in the game and not feel tortured by it like so many players do.
Yeah, he really is unique that way. And, you know, Brian Burke, when he was with us, used to always talk about how he liked grouchy players. He liked grumpy people. He liked, you know, the people that came to the rink and they were sour and they complained about the coffee and they complained about, you know, where's all the clear tape and just complained about everything. But that's not Joe. Before we get on to the rest of the program today, just a sublime player, Hall of Famer, whenever that's that calls, and probably Borny, the best passer of this generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the way he uses his body as a shield while he buys time to find the next lane and see things developing, it's unbelievable. He's a one-of-a-kind player. You can't really describe anyone else who plays of that mold. I guess maybe you'd say Yager did a little bit, but not many people like Jumbo.
Yeah, and still going, and hopes to play soon, as early as next week. Congrats to all of our winners of Sportsnet 590 The Fan that virtually met Joe Thornton last night. Matt Sundin, you want to feel old, Borny?
Yes, I do.
Matt Sundin turns 50 tomorrow.
Woo, we're there,
sorry.
Huh?
Sorry about that.
50? How did that happen?
You know, there are always interesting discussions around Matt Sundin in Toronto. And one of the discussions that I always sort of dip my beak in and don't mind having a chin wag about is, should he have been a winger?
Oh, yeah?
Well, I mean, listen, he was a wonderful center for the Toronto Maple Leafs, make no mistake about it, and also mm-hmm. for the Vancouver Canucks and Quebec Nordiques. But when you look at a lot of his signature plays, it's cutting off the wing, cutting in off the wing, sticking out the leg, popping a water bottle. I don't know. Like, you look at a lot of the big moves and the big moments of Matt Sundin's career, did they not look more like moves by a winger than a center?
I guess on the offensive side of things, for sure. I think in general, you're like a big guy like that. Get him down low defending our net. I like that too. But yeah, you can certainly enable a winger to go play down low in the D zone. So sure. Hey, listen, it's a new era of hockey. It would have been interesting to know if a coach today would have seen that and said, just because you're big doesn't mean you have to play the wing. Let's try play the center. We'll try something else.
Absolutely. A couple of other bits of news around the around hockey, not necessarily the NHL, but the AHL. Lisa McLeod, Minister of Heritage, Sport, Tourism, and Culture, has given the green light for the two Ontario AHL teams to play games at home. So that is Toronto, Borny, and that is Belleville. I don't need to tell you how important American Hockey League team is to the NHL franchise, but we're going to pause that conversation and pick it up after we talk to our good friend PJ Stock, hockey analyst. Count Stockula, how are you today, sir?
I am living the dream. Any chance I can get your kids' autographs? TV superstars.
You like that one? That's pretty good, eh? Yeah, I know. We have to widen the door frames here at the house to fit their heads in now all of a sudden, because all their teachers and classmates at virtual school will keep going on about how they were on the backyard rink with Ron McLean. But that was a lot of fun. But listen, you're an outdoor rink guy though, right, PJ? Like, yep. You've always played, your kids play, like, you're an ODR guy.
It's funny to just say ODR, how that's changed. But my kids, when I first started calling it the ODR, I had no idea what they were talking about. Oh, go to the ODR. I grew up in such a part of my youth. I remember growing up, just go to the rink and you'd be there for hours, like hours. And you just, yeah. At night, we'd sneak in at night. We had these, it was in tennis courts, right? So they used to have where I lived, there was always a great park. So it'd be three tennis courts. And in the winter, that's where they put one of the rinks. But it was all enclosed in a fence. So they'd lock it at night. So we used to we'd climb the tennis court fence to go at night. And we'd be able to turn the lights on because that's where the switch was on the inside for the light. We'd be playing at night till, 2 in the morning. It was just, it was so awesome. So I love the ODRs, as the cool kids call it now.
That's cool kids. That's the cool kids right there, Borny.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm so resistant to ODR. It just like became a thing like a minute ago, and I'm like, all right, I get it.
You already hate it. You already have contempt for it. And you just heard about it for like the first time 3 minutes ago.
I'm the worst.
So
PJ, we'll take you to the NHL from the ODR, if you don't mind, and focus on the Montreal Canadiens, who hit a little bit of a rough patch here, off to a great start to the season, but lost three of the last four. I guess where do you see the Montreal Canadiens right now? Where are they in the season, and where are they headed the rest of the way?
For RDS, we do a show every night, and last Friday, and we have to we put up, it's called a manchette, like the little like a newspaper heading you put up to start the show, and you have a 30-second rant. And mine was last Friday was, is this a mirage? The Montreal Canadiens, the way they've been playing and the start of the season, like everything they touched was working. Everything, it was like Anderson had two goals skating full speed where he batted the puck out of the air. Toffoli, every guy that the Canadiens brought in has been spectacular. Toffoli's just plays against Vancouver, and just every shot, even the shots that are missing the net are going in. He had a goal against Calgary that shouldn't have gone in. They're just everything that they touch. And I don't know if they were that good or if the teams they were playing were struggling that much. The Toronto game was a little bit like that, and Montreal against Edmonton last night. And I look at them from where they started to where they are right now. And I can, the one thing that was, I think, a key to their success early, they got a lot stronger in front of their net and in front of the opposition's net with Toffoli and Anderson. Gallagher got more space. And they've got away from that on both ends of the rink. It was easy. That game against Toronto, was there five checks all game? Edmonton was the same thing last night. And they're a team that I can understand if you're Toronto, you don't want to get into that. Let your freewheeling guys freewheel. Same thing with Edmonton. Mm-hmm. But Montreal, they have to get a little dirty. The guys that they bring in, they're big bodies. Edmondson's a big body. Anderson's a big body. Toffoli's a big body. They have to get in there and get a little dirtier. And the last few games, I think they've fallen away from it.
Okay, so we'll get right to it because we sort of beat around the bush. Then we finally get around to the goaltending question with the Montreal Canadiens, and it's an expensive it's an expensive question. It is a prickly road you walk down in Canada when you talk about the Montreal Canadiens goaltending, because the conversation is about Carey Price right now, an .896 save percentage. And there have been a couple of people that I've talked to, like goaltenders that sort of exist in these tight goaltending communities. And the one thing that people have noticed more so this season than ever before, and we saw it on Wednesday with the Justin Hall goal, which goes in clean from distance, you mentioned optical illusions. Is it an optical illusion, or is Carey Price having a hard time this season with shots from distance?
Listen, I get in trouble all the time. Like last time I was on your show, we discussed do people call me up and give me because I say things. I've been saying this for 3 years. I don't know, and I don't get a vote in anything. You know, no one. I just get texts or emails from people telling me that I'm a moron for saying this stuff. But all I do is I do that by comparables. Everyone thinks Carey's the best goalie in the league. And this is not a shot at Carey, what I'm about to say. I just get mad at the pundits that think that he's the best. So I know it sounds like it's on Carey, but it's not. It's for the people that don't do their homework. Yes, he looks like that. He's got all the talent. You know, everything looks great, his mindset and everything. But at the end of the day, it's comparables. It's how are his numbers versus the other players. And his numbers stink the last 3 years. Like, they've been no good for 3 years. Yes, he won with Team Canada. Listen, I could have made some saves in those games as well with those two teams, two Olympics. But since, you know, he had one good playoff run, I should know this off by heart, but I think he's won six playoff series in his career. I think he has unbelievable seasons, unbelievable seasons. So, and then he has mediocre ones. And the last three have been very mediocre. He's bottom tier goaltending. His numbers have been the last 3 years, you know, he had 934, 933 a couple of years ago in 2014-15 when the team was good. But it's been 900, 918, 909. And unfortunately, again, with the comparables, you don't want to bring up the salary cap, but you have to because your team is built that way. So it's not at Carey, my argument. It's for the people that he's $10.5 million. He's got to be better. And I'm thankful that Allen lost last night. I am. Because what do you do if Carey has those numbers, played the way he did against Toronto, and Allen's having the start that he has at the 201 goals against and a 933, and they have the Leafs coming into town, which is the biggest game of the season for the Montreal Canadiens this Saturday. Yeah.
So hang on. Go ahead, Jeff. I was going to say, let me pick up on one other question. I've never understood this. Why is there such a sensitivity about pointing this out about Carey Price? In this country, it's almost like this hands-off conversation. You can't talk about Carey Price and some of the numbers because we still believe that Carey Price is the best goalie in the league because that's what we've always said. When, to your point, you look at the evidence, you look at the save percentage, and it is significantly decreased since his, as you mentioned, halcyon days of 2016, 2015. Why is it such a touchy subject all across this country? Like, I don't want to cynically say, if his name was, Price-Alevsky, we might be talking about it differently. But maybe there's something to that. I don't know. Maybe it's because of international success. I don't know. Why is it such a touchy issue, PJ?
I'm with you. But listen, because we're afraid to ruffle our friends, who work at our stations, who write the articles about how great these guys are. And you know what? Imagine if Toronto had – Anderson's been great. We just don't give him enough credit in the last couple of years. If you compare him to Carey Price. We just don't – Carey, we've anointed him as the guy. And everyone always says, well, the players say it. The players say it. Well, I've had those papers that get put in front of you. And they're like, hey, sign out your who do you think is going to win this award? And the players vote, Besides the MVP, you just, speed through it. Like, no one really cares. It's just you pick your team player and you just kind of, blah, 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 write down what everyone else is writing down. But it's just, I don't know. And it's not.
You know what that is, PJ? That's the example of, I'm going to give you an answer that's going to get me in the least amount of trouble. That's exactly what that is. Okay, what can I say here that is going to allow me to, as you point out, not ruffle feathers, not get me in any trouble, not become a distraction, and not become something that ultimately I will have to answer for?
I think it was you guys that put it up the other night, doing a spectacular job on television like you always do, Mr. Mayor.
I looked really good, too. Three-piece suit, Peach. Come on. You love that. You love that.
It was money. I think Don Cherry was the master of it. Like, if you don't have anything good to say, just have people talking about your clothing. Like, trick them into leaving, like, hey, oh, my God, look at his suit. Do you see the cars on his jacket? But no one heard what he said for the entire time. And that was you. I don't even know if you spoke the other night, but I was like, damn, he looks fine.
You know what that is? That's Marshall McLuhan, old U of T people will know this one, great cultural theorist, used to say, if you say something on the radio, people will talk about what you said. If you say the same thing on television, they'll discuss the color of your tie. It's 100% true.
So you
it's
100%
look true.
So, but so my
just
point
dress
was,
it up.
I think you guys put out a thing. The most four goal games given up in a year and a bit. I think like last year maybe. And I forget who was number one, but Carey Price was number two. Mm-hmm. So for me, the goals against is one. It's hard because breakdowns and everything. The goals against, but for me, it's save percentage.
Goals against is a team stat. Save percentage is a goalie stat.
And he's at .896 this year, .909 last year, the year before .918. So that was much better because the year before that was .900. You know, 9 out of 10. If you're playing against him, ideally you do what you did last night, Toronto did
2 nights ago.
You know, you get 10, he's going to give you one. Tonight, we need 40 shots. That's our goal now. And unfortunately, it's just math. And I'm not the advanced stats guy. Borny over there is, but I'm just saying, I can do math. You know.
So, Peach, when you look at the standings in the North right now, do you see anything out of whack? Like, you see the Canadians are pretty solidly in second place there. The Jets are 8-4-1. The Senators are 2-12-1. The Canucks are struggling, too. Is there anyone you think is kind of wildly out of place with your expectations?
Vancouver's not this bad. I really do like the record. They're not this bad. When they played the Montreal Canadiens, I said earlier, everything Montreal did, it was crazy. Like, everything they touched went in. You know, Quinn Hughes, they're all young. So they get in this little funk, you know, and they start struggling. And it's taking them, it's hard to kind of get out of it right now. And they're a team, if you look at all the stats, like top goal scorers in the league are all in the North Division. Most giveaways in the league, almost every team in the North is in that division. You know, so, and there are teams that are, Edmonton, I guess Winnipeg, there was questions about, well, obviously Ottawa, you know, Toronto, you know, the defense in this division is not as strong. So you have to have a short memory because it's going to be about goals, this division. And unfortunately, you know, there's ebbs and flows to it. And Vancouver's not getting as much as they're giving up right now. But Ottawa's Ottawa. I don't think they should be losing as bad as they're losing, but it's Ottawa. I think, as you mentioned at Winnipeg, I think they're going to get a lot better with Pierre Dubois coming down the middle. And I think, you know, Calgary, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Montreal, it's so hard to say. But I think they're all so close. And this four-point game, we call it, whatever you want to do it, you can make up a lot of distance or lose a lot of distance every night. I think Toronto, they're playing, even though sometimes they're not playing the best, good teams find ways to win. And if you look at their scoring, their top four guys are leading that team. So I think they are a class above everybody else. And I think besides the bottom one, they're going to fall in and Ottawa. The other guys are all mixy-mashy. I think it's going to happen all year.
The big story around this shop and the big story around the NHL this week, PJ, was Ron Hextall and Brian Burke taking over the Pittsburgh Penguins. Burke is president of hockey operations, and of course Ron Hextall as general manager. I don't think the Hextall move was a surprise. He seemed to be the preferred candidate from almost day one. But the Burke news caught all of us, specifically here. How about you? Were you as shocked as everybody else, or how did you receive that news?
Well, you guys are going to lose Smiley off your panel. That's
there goes the sunshine.
We need someone to be grumpy on the panel on Wednesday night.
You lost Smiley. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer to that is. And he's had success in a lot of places that he's gone. And I wish everyone the most success where they do go. And I don't know.
Essentially, I'm asking you is, A, what do you think of the Penguins? And B, what do you think needs to be done to the Penguins?
Well, and I think the reason the other guy left is because he knew what had to be done to the Penguins, and that's why they brought in a couple harder guys that can make those moves. That's my opinion, if I can say it that way. Burkey and Hexy, for giving them nicknames, they need a shakeup. You want you want their core to retire just because it's a great storybook. But in reality, it's business, and you're running out of assets. How do you get assets? Well, you give up something that's worth a lot of them to help rebuild your cupboard, and that's kind of what they have to do. But, you know, I think Rutherford wanted to do it. I think the ownership said, you can't move these guys. He's like, all right, I'm walking before I get fired. So I think they brought up some guys that are a little, you know, truculent to kind of get the job done. I thought they would have went a little, I don't want to say it's an old boys club, but it's kind of an old boys club. I thought you'd bring in a little bit of new blood, new mentality. You got to change up the way we think and kind of move forward. But I'm always super excited with guys getting hired, no matter whether it's given a second chance, a third chance, anything. And I wish him and Ron nothing but lots of success.
Peach, when you're looking around the league, how has your viewing experience been as a fan this year? Like, it's a weird year, and we're talking so much about the North Division. Are you keeping up on the other divisions? Have you, or is it just like a one-division league for you this year?
I listen, the right answer for me to say on radio is, oh no, I'm watching everything. When I used to work at Hockey Night, like in my basement, I had a couch and I had two TVs, and I had one TV that had game, and I watched everything. You know, I'm a little bit more focused right now on the Montreal Canadiens in the North, because that's kind of what I cover. And the real answer is, I have seen two games from the other division right now, because I don't work at Hockey Night in Canada, and I'm doing mostly the Northeast. And sorry, Northeast, the North. A buddy of mine in Boston wrote, well, yesterday that Brad Marchand should be up for MVP of the league. And I'm like, listen, I haven't seen a game there. I don't think people in the North have been watching the Honda West or the Discover Central. It's been hard. It's been hard because there's hockey every night of the teams that we're covering here, which has been great. It's been super fun, but yeah, I haven't watched a ton. I'm lying to you guys.
Well, okay, hang on. Then let's sharpen the pencil more on the Habs. I am always curious about the marketplace. I am always curious about the fans, and expectations to kick off the season were high. To your point, everything was working. It was the Midas touch. Now that there's a speed wobble, and maybe Montreal has come back down to earth a little bit here, what's the reaction in Montreal? What are hockey fans doing with this?
Quickly, just retweeted. It was James Murphy who I was retweeting and tweeting. We were talking the other day with.
Yeah, I know James. Yeah, great guy.
Yeah. So what do the Montreal Canadiens do? Is it a mirage? What kind of team really are they? I think when you go into a season where you have your number, let's call it one and number two or two and three or whatever you want, centers, your two centers are 20-year-olds and 21-year-olds. That's a lot of pressure. And I think we got so high with the way the team finished in the playoffs, had a great 2 weeks, and then they had a great start to the season. But don't forget, they finished 24th in the league last year. Yes, they brought in some shiny new toys that have worked tremendously well to start the season off. But the other teams, you know, no one really got a training camp. So what really is that first month of the season? I think that first month is almost the training camp for everyone. And I think we're going to see what we have in another couple of weeks. You can't really judge any team. I'm not judging Vancouver. I'm judging Ottawa. But, you know, I think Edmonton's going to get a little better. They got, you know, new players. And Winnipeg just made a big trade. I think Montreal is fine. Let's have this conversation in 2 weeks, and then we'll know if the panic button goes. The only issue that is being discussed in this city is Carey and Allen, because of how great Allen's been and how Carey's not as great as he can be.
Also worth discussing, why is Jeff Petrie Bobby Orr? What is going on with
is that amazing?
Points or something?
He's
Isn't
great.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And actually, the coach the other day said, you know, he didn't downplay Shane Weber, but he more or less said, you know, when they talked about the top pairing, he just more or less said that, you know, it's not that we don't have a second pair. I just think our two pairs, Edmondson and Petrie, are just as good. And he's been unbelievable. He looks just jumping in the rush. And this is what my argument was about Montreal. And I thought it would be way more physical this year because you're playing teams every night. If I was playing a team 10 times, I would be trying to, you know, make slow down their D, hit their D, hit their D, hit their D, hit their D. So every time you're on the ice, you know, that D is going to be questioning where you are. It's been the defense, you know, Quinn Hughes has 4,000 points. You know, these D aren't being hit. And so they're jumping in the rush all the time. I know it's a weird season, but at times it looks like shinny hockey. And, you know, he's just been he's been awesome. So I can't say – I just think the players, the teams that he's playing against are being a little bit lenient. And but 14 points, but the plus 12 is a big number that pops out, and he's been great.
Before I let you go, when you talk about the Montreal Canadiens, there's a lot of headline stories and a lot of headline players, and you mentioned, you know, the two young centers. I always, and listen, he comes in on Selke ballots all the time. Now, I think he's one of the more underrated players in the entire NHL. I know he hasn't got out to the best of possible starts, but where's the spot for Philippe Deneau here?
Good question. I was actually going to throw that back at you when you guys went early.
I love him. I think this guy is money in the bank. I got all day for Deneau.
So we're in a league where you pay for goals, and we pay to stop him, which and he's not. That's why we're arguing. But Philippe Deneau is in a tough situation right now because, you know, he wants a contract. He wants an extension. He sees what his value has been the last 3 years. And it came up, you know, he's been like, I'm with you. This team does not win without Philippe Deneau.
Yep.
He does everything for them. Problem is, he doesn't have much of an offensive upside. He's been on the number one trio for the Montreal Canadiens for the last, you know, like 3 years, doing all the dirty work, all the big face-offs, everything. But if you go back even to his junior numbers, he's not a guy that produces points. So does he want to look at the situation with the Montreal Canadiens where he's going to see himself probably as 2B, potentially 3, on a team that's going to be great, or he still thinks he's a top 1-2, and he wants to go get more money somewhere else because the Canadiens don't have enough to give him, and he's not going to produce here, so you can't give it to him. So what does he want to do? I think they have to sign him. I just hope that he understands he's a kid from Victoriaville. I mean, he's Francophone. He's everything the Canadiens need, every team needs, but he's got 0 goals and 5 assists playing with Gallagher and Tatar for the first 14 games of the season. Yeah, they're winning, but he's not producing. And again, like I said, he pay for goals. So what's that magic number to keep him here? What do you give a guy like that? What would you guys give him?
He's at $3 million right now. To me, he's a, and I know, you know, again, when it comes not to Deneau, to me, he's a $5 million player.
It's a lot of money.
I know it's a lot of money.
For your third line center, right?
I get, but that's just the thing. Like, I don't see him as a third line center. They may have him slotted there because of Suzuki and Kotkaniemi. But to me, he's a top six player.
I mean, with all due respect to Kotkaniemi, guy's got a goal in 14 games. He's not exactly.
I know.
If you can't play ahead of him, are you worth $5 million? I don't know. Tough spot there.
Kotkaniemi's, you know, he's obviously going to get a bridge contract, but again, he's, you know, what Deneau's playing with Tatar and Gallagher has 0 goals, 5 assists. You can say what you want about Kotkaniemi, but he's got 7 points and a goal in the same amount of games. So, and he's playing with, you know, he had Perry on his line. He's had Armia on his line. But listen, that's that spot that's hurting him a little. Suzuki's been all world. Kotkaniemi and Dano, we need a little more offense from those two.
All right, we got to hustle. Peej, always a blast. Enjoy Hockey Day in Canada tomorrow and the Leafs and the Habs, two of six Canadian teams in action. Thanks for this, PJ.
Always, boys. Cheers. Good morning.
There is PJ Stock, who is, I'll tell you what, when it comes to honest commentators about the Montreal Canadiens, PJ's right up around the top.
Yeah.
And it's always like that Carey Price conversation. Do you have a theory on why everyone's so shy about mentioning it? It's almost like, don't talk about the save percentage for Carey Price.
I don't know. He's just he's beloved, right? He's an awesome guy. You know, he's one of the – Canada doesn't produce much in the way of goaltending these days. Like, am I wrong in saying that? Like,
you're right. No, you're right.
You look at the Olympic teams coming up, you know, and we love our goalies. We loved Patrick Waugh and Marty Brodeur and Luongo and, you know – he's kind of our guy that's left, it feels like, until someone takes that mantle. And so it's a little hard to, you know, verbally imply that he's less. You know, I picked them as the fourth best goaltending tandem in the league before the year, and I got killed for that.
Oh, you got destroyed. I remember that.
So now you're on. I don't know. It's a tough reality check.
You're doing your Twitter victory lap now, or Twitter victory tour on this now, right now, Borny?
It's not time yet, but this is my first little mention that I'm thinking about it.
I'll tell. Okay, that's good. You're chumming the waters, waiting for the victory lap. The thing about it is, if you look at it, you know, internationally, the goaltending factory used to reside in Quebec, and then it moved to Finland, Helsinki specifically. Now it seems as if most of the elite-level goaltenders are coming from Russia.
Yeah, I'm not sure why it moves around that way. You're right, though. It is pretty easy to pinpoint that shift around. But, yeah, Canada has struggled lately.
The feeling in Canada is that, or the feeling sort of internationally, the problem with Canada is there hasn't been a top-down dissemination of all information for everybody. There's like little mini camps of goaltending pockets, and no one shares information. Quite the opposite in Finland. And I think it was the same group originally who I think came over from, well, I can't remember, it might have been BC, to Helsinki to start, you know, the goaltending factory, for lack of a better term. And then those same people went to Russia. I got to check on that, but that's what I've got knocking around in my head, that's how everything ended up.
That's and now true. I have a great article to write.
Okay, you know what then? I'll take a in collaboration with credit on that
one.
I'll get you the. But there is a fascinating story there, with how you know the goal and the with the idea of top down information, as opposed to everyone in their little pockets, like these little like fiefdoms where I've got my information and my guys, and no one's gonna learn our secrets. And you see the results. You see the results in this country. We'll hit a break. We'll come back. More Toronto Maple Leafs in action tomorrow against the Montreal Canadiens. I want to talk about gold helmets, though, and why I liked it yesterday for the Vegas Golden Knights specifically. This is Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in a moment. All right, welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday. Starting at noon, Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne. Not the most high-impact game last night between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Anaheim Ducks. It was a 1-0 final for Anaheim. But the story of this one, as the Vegas Golden Knights moved to 8-2-1, the Ducks to 6-6-3. The story of this one was fashion, specifically. We've seen the gold helmet before in Europe. For example, where the leading scorer in the league wears the gold helmet, I believe, Borny, for as long as he is the scoring leader, and then it gets relinquished to someone else.
The golden target. I love it.
I was going to say, if that's North America, you know what's happening. Oh, look, Buddy's got the gold helmet. Might as well paint a bullseye on him.
Wish you could track hits against all the players, and then like how many more the guy in the gold helmet takes.
Well, what would you do? You're skating against the guy with the gold helmet.
Yeah, definitely. You're making sure you get every lick in possible you can on the guy. And I think there'd have to be some sort of bounty in the room, like money on the board, if you could take the helmet off his head. You know, some sort of dislodge the gold helmet for $100.
Well, last night it wasn't a gold helmet. It was gold helmets for the Vegas Golden Knights. And I'm not sure how you felt about it, Borny, but I loved it. And here's why. I love when teams, markets, players, whomever and whatever is just honest about themselves. Be honest about who you are. And to me, one of the most charming things, and I think one of the smartest things the Vegas Golden Knights have done since the beginning of this franchise is just embrace everything about that market. Like the cheesiness of it, like you see it in game presentation, like all of it, like everything screams Vegas. They're just being honest about themselves. We're not trying to pretend to be this, you know, blue collar town, like we're rough and tumble Philadelphia. Like they're not trying to be that. Like we are Vegas. This is what we do. Everything, we're trying to make it larger than life. It's all about showmanship and the show and the spotlight and the stage. Which is why I don't know that there are many teams that I could look at and say legitimately you could pull off having your entire team wearing gold helmets. But for me, for Vegas, it works. Maybe
you know
the only market.
Can do it?
But Vegas can do it. Who else can do it?
Notre Dame. Notre Dame has done gold helmets, and it has looked spectacular. They've been a little bit more matte finish, maybe, but like these Vegas ones. So
shiny.
I'm going to be hypocritical because I'm with you. I have said that Vegas should lean all the way into being Vegas, and they should be in ridiculously sparkly uniforms, and it should be glitz and glamour and look cheap, even though it's supposed to look rich and all that. The helmets are that.
Flared out Cooperalls.
Sure. Everything like that, like I have pushed for that for Vegas. But these helmets are just a bit much. I know that's hypocritical. There's no such thing in Vegas. Okay.
Hang on. Let me ask, how many times have you been to Vegas in your life?
Dad coached there, so I was there quite a bit before Vegas meant Vegas, but probably, I don't know, half dozen. It's called six.
Okay. Have you ever been in Vegas and said these words? I think that's a bit much.
No.
Because that's like, Vegas is all like, there's no such thing as that's a bit much when it comes to Vegas. That's why I love it. That's why I love the gold helmets on the guys.
I will knowingly turf my opinion that it's too much. Actually, it's kind of like Vegas where I'm like, I acknowledge that that's too much, but it's okay because it's Vegas.
Yeah. It gets a pass. You're just like, well, you know what? I'm in, you know, adult Toys R Us here. I'm in Vegas. Like, this is grown up Toys R Us town. Like, oh, okay, I get it. It's kind of goofy and wouldn't work if I was in Detroit, but it's Vegas. So the gold helmets get a pass as far as I'm concerned. Okay. Around the NHL last night, you know, PJ said that he didn't believe that the Vancouver Canucks were as bad as their record indicates. But this is six the wrong way now. They lose again last night, 3-1 to the Calgary Flames. They are 6-11-0. And I look at it, and normally I'd say, well, I know we're just over 20% of the season, that's gone. But if you get on a good run, you can make up. And then I remind myself of one thing, which is that sobering reality. If you look around all the other teams in the division, never lose sight of the fact that all the points stay in the division.
Yeah.
I don't know that I want to say Vancouver's out of it because we're not at that point yet, I don't think. But are we getting close to saying, man, Vancouver's taking themselves out? Like, Ottawa's taking themselves out of this thing. How close are you to saying, you know, Vancouver's getting uncomfortably in the same position?
Yeah. Well, I guess at the same time, Jeff, the fact that all the points are in the division when you're down, you could say that at least you have the chance to catch people, right? Like the people who are directly ahead of you, you're going to have games against them, and in theory, you win those games, you should be able to make up ground, at least against one or two teams. You don't like to have to make up ground on too many teams, and they're getting to that point now. I know Elliot went on the radio today, and he said that you know, the timetable for the Canucks has likely moved forward. You know, Elliot said, I do think there's the possibility of a change coming soon. And it kind of feels like even if they don't make a change that makes a tangible difference in the look of their hockey team, they need to make a change for a feel's sake, for a fresh start, for a marker where you can say that's where things changed for them. Just because continuing to go deeper into this hole they've been going or digging right now, it's not working.
But do you think that, and this is always, you know, Brian Burke used to always remind us about this, like, don't just focus on the hockey. Think about the other businesses that the owners indulge in, that the owners possess, like where they make their real money, like why they got, or how they got to a position to buy a hockey team in the first place. I don't know too many owners right now that have an appetite to pay people not to work.
Yeah,
like this year specifically. Like you look at the Vancouver Canucks, and if you're, you know, if you want to try to be, you know, put a positive spin on something, you say, well, you know what, the only three back of the Calgary Flames until you look at the games in hand, and you look at the win percentage, and it's, you know, 353. Like, oh man, this is tough. And you say, all right, so the Volcano wants a sacrifice. You know, does the owner have the appetite for that right now just to make the fan base feel better or feel like they are doing something right now? Like this year out of all of the years is probably the year that you can't do that, right? I mean, I might be way off. And by the end of the day, there might be sea change in Vancouver. I don't know, but that's kind of the way that it feels to me. This year, I don't know that owners want to pay people not to do their job.
Right. I guess the encouraging, or not the encouraging thing necessarily, but if you're a Canucks fan and why it might not happen, is just it is a shortened season. Like, if you're the Aquilinis and you're looking at this like, hey, we want to make a change with Benning, it's like, even though the season's only 14 games old, it's also over in 2 months. You know, like,
yeah.
Two and change or whatever. Like, it's not that far away to just say,
yeah,
this is a bad one, but at this point, we should just kind of plow forward. Maybe we won't be good, and maybe we can get a top pick out of this, and, you know, this could set us up for the future. If we want to make a change after the season, we do, but... Yeah. It almost would make no sense to make the change this season unless you're very aggressive about thinking this team is better than it's been this season.
The only thing that flies in the face of the argument that we're talking about here, Borny, which is, hey, listen, you know, no hurry to do this. This is pandemic year. Everyone's looking for, you know, every nickel and every quarter. The only thing that flies in the face of that is you have big decisions to make with Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson. And if Jim Benning,
in terms of just how much to pay them,
and if you don't think that Jim Benning is going to be your guy at the end of the season, do you leave him here with the decisions and the price tag, the decimal point, etc., on two of your cornerstones for the future? That's one of the arguments. So you say, okay, you know what? It's pandemic here. You don't want to pay people not to work. What are you doing with Jim Benning? If he's really not your guy, do you let him do those contracts? Do you let him do trade deadline? Do you let him get, you know what I'm talking about?
And then, you know, going back and forth on my own point, but this is my first time kind of considering this, I was saying that, you know, you might as well just wait till the end of the season. But it seems like new guys always want to take some time to assess what's there and assess what they've got. Maybe this shortened season would provide a crash course for someone. I mean, it's a tough decision here. These are, you know, people's lives, and Benning has done a lot of good things. Unfortunately, there's too many bad to point at right now, and if they continue to lose, it feels like he's the guy, right? He's so... Yeah, tough call. Depends on how the Aquilinis feel about their dollars and cents and their commitment to the future financially for this Canucks team.
And the GM change is never one that changes your fortunes right now. Like, the GM change is the change for the future. The coach change is the one that is, you know, the one that many point to and says, if you want to, you know, supercharge your team, or, you know, give it a boost. Yeah, you know, give it a shot in there. Do something to jumpstart your squad. You do it behind the bench, or you do it with a trade. Problem with trades right now is, A, you lose the player, and B, you wait for the one coming back.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that you're making trades within the division necessarily.
I guess the thing to do now, as someone who is a hockey analyst for a living, is just to be honest and, like, the Canucks are done. Like, the Canucks are done this year. They are.
Already you're doing it?
I'm doing it. Yeah. They're 6-11. They got to climb over too many teams, and they're not good enough. You know, that's just their reality. I know that's, you know, not what fans want to hear, and I don't think – I'm with PJ. I don't think they're as bad as their record. I think they're probably – you know, what's their winning percentage, you said, Jeff? Like 353
353.
Or something?
Yeah, 353.
They're not finishing 353, but they might finish 450. And either way, it's not going to be good enough. So you have to start thinking about the future at that point. And you can say it's only 17 games into the season, I think, the Canucks have played.
Yes.
But, okay, well, you're under 40 games left in this one. So it's time to, you know, readjust the scope. I'm sorry this is a shortened season. It all didn't work out. The offseason moves didn't pan out. But that's my honest take. That's the one when I get off the show and someone goes, hey, you said some okay things about the Canucks. And I'm like, yeah, but really, I think they stink. I think the Canucks are burnt. So let's just have it out there.
Okay, so then we've taken four and we've turned into three teams that are competing now for two playoff spots. So it's Edmonton, Winnipeg, Calgary competing for spots 3 and 4. Or do we switch or flip-flop Edmonton and Montreal, or dare we say Winnipeg, who's got a pretty good winning percentage right now? Winnipeg's only played 13 games.
Yeah, that's
right. They've
true.
Got 17 points. They've only played 13 games.
They get such ahead of Montreal in winning percentage, are they?
They are. They're 654 and Montreal 643.
Yeah. There are certainly more pieces in Winnipeg where I'm like, that guy is a difference-making player. You know, up front, the fear for me with Montreal is not that Carey Price isn't going to be great, because between him and Allen, I think they'll have goaltending. It's just that I said before the season, I don't know where the goals are suddenly going to come from. And boy, that looked like a bad take early on. But it's still, you know, I think their last four games, they've totaled six goals. I was looking at that before the show. It's something like that. You know, they're not an offensive dynamo, and that's great that Toffoli and Anderson are off to nice goal-scoring starts, but, like, a lot of guys who are dish-first guys and not goal scorers, and, yeah, you got to score goals in this day and age. So they're fine, but if a team does pass Montreal, yeah, Winnipeg would certainly seem to be the likely one.
And you know what? You always have to have a look at teams in this division and say, okay, who's received the Ottawa bump and who hasn't?
And yeah, still, I saw a really funny tweet that every team should have an OGR, an Ottawa games remaining category, beside their point total, so you have a sense of where they're at.
Calgary has not had the Ottawa experience yet, but right now they're getting the Vancouver experience and a big win last night to kick things off. We'll hit a break. We'll come back, get you set for Hockey Day in Canada, specifically the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens here in the city. This is Hockey Central. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The Toronto Maple Leafs won round one on Wednesday against the Canadiens. We've got you covered for the rematch tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to Hockey Central. Want to let you know as well, 205, Justin Hall, defenseman for the Toronto Maple Leafs, will be on Reicher's block. Big goal against the Montreal Canadiens on Wednesday. Clean shot, too. We talked about that off the top of the program with PJ Stock. You have a quick thought on Justin Hall and his emergence as legit top four defenseman in the NHL?
Yes, check out sportsnet.ca to read what Justin Bourne thinks of Justin Hall, top four defenseman. I wrote about him today. You don't see many of those slap shots from old Halsey, but you get a lot of other good things. There's details in the article.
Really quick note, the New York Islanders have placed Leo Komarov on waivers.
He's not
Toronto.
Coming home, Jeff. He's not coming home.
No. I know he's not going to. I know he's not going to the Toronto Maple Leafs anytime soon. Just a note for Maple Leafs fans, since that is a former Maple Leaf. Real quick, Hockey Day tomorrow, amongst the six Canadian teams in action, Toronto and Montreal. Your expectations for tomorrow?
A very good Montreal team. I think a couple of losses. They're going to be at their best. They got a lot of good players there. They'll be better.
All right, and that will let you go. Smith and Jones next. Don't forget Justin Hall, 205 on Writer's Block. We're back Monday with more Hockey Central. Have a great weekend.